Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, one of Britain's rising literary stars on telling a story about immigrant London that hasn't been told. But first, how cartoonists and comedians are telling the story of our political culture today. President Trump is an editorial cartoonist dream. Many draw him with a swoop of sherbet-colored hair, small suspicious eyes, and a superior scowl for an expression. Comedians are also having a field day with razor-sharp satire at the president's expense. Here's John Oliver from a recent episode of This Week Tonight.
The prospect of talking about Trump yet again feels exhausting. We're all so tired of him, every room in America should have a sign on the wall that counts the number of minutes that it's been since someone brought up his f***ing name. But that is the thing. Trump's presidency is like one of his handshakes. It pulls you in whether you like it or not.
The Washington Post recently reported that entertainment companies are discovering that their fans are making decisions based on political ideology. We've invited a political scientist to talk about why, and as she joins us, I'd like to hear from you. Are you drawn to one cartoonist or comedian over another because of the political views you hold or they hold? Can cartoonists and comedians communicate ideas that few other forms of media cannot? So talk to me about whether you are drawn to some specific comedians, particularly in late night, or cartoonists because of the political views you hold or they hold. And do you think cartoonists and comedians can talk about our political culture in a way that's pretty difficult to get to otherwise? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. On Twitter, at CarrieNPR. Allison D'Agnes is professor at Shippensburg University, where she's a political scientist, and she joins us today from Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. And Allison, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Carrie. It's great to be here.
I would say that while the medium to communicate political humor is modern, we should note that political humor is not. In fact, satire in politics has been a kind of release valve for a long time, hasn't it?
Oh, it has. And it goes back way before the American founding. One of the more famous pieces was, of course, you know, A Modest Proposal from Jonathan Swift. And that was a really sharp send-up of a crisis in Ireland at the time. And so since then, you know, people have looked to humor as a way to kind of take our medicine with a little bit of sugar and talk about things that are difficult at the same time. Have some fun with what's going on politically. And so it's very popular. It's very enjoyable, and it can be very humorous.
So I use the phrase release valve, and in some ways I feel like satire serves that purpose. We need a way to laugh at ourselves, to laugh at our leaders. There's something therapeutic about it, isn't there? What's your take on that?
You know, someone once said that it's very hard to feel two things at once. And so I think that particularly today, when the volume is up really high and the temperatures are really hot, it feels better to laugh. It is that release. You're absolutely right. And so it's hard to feel, it's hard to laugh when you're also scared. And so if you are scared, laughing is a good way to try and get around that.
So you feel that We're in a political culture at the moment where that's infused with a fair amount of fear, and that may be influencing the kind of humor that we're seeing. Put the two together for me.
Sure. You know, the political humor landscape has changed significantly in the last 3 years, and that's because really the political culture has changed as well. We are more polarized now. We are angrier now. And because of that, political humor is different as well. And so it used to be, you know, it started with, and of course it started before Jon Stewart, and it started before Saturday Night Live. But Jon Stewart on The Daily Show in the early 2000s really made political humor sort of more accessible and more fun, and it became very popular. And so there were more voices that were added to this, and some were successful and some were less successful. But right now we just have sort of a glut of options, and a lot of those are on late night, and you know, social media is also a good place to get it too. So yeah, we have a lot of folks who are out there. But at the same time, like I said, we're just more polarized. And so that humor has become more polarized as well. And that, I will be very, very interested to hear the listeners' response if they think that someone used to be funny, but they've gotten too political, and therefore they're not funny anymore. Because I've heard that as I've given talks around the country, that a lot of folks said, you know, I really used to like, say, Samantha Bee, but she's just not my cup of tea anymore.
I have to say, I've had that experience. I love Samantha Bee. I think her writing is clever. But it's a tirade, you know, every time I tune in. And I have to say, after living the news cycle, sometimes I find that kind of exhausting.
Sure, absolutely. And I think a lot of people do. You know, in addition to that, the book that I wrote in 2012 was about why there were so few conservatives in political humor. And one of the reasons is because if you start to write a joke or a sketch and your point is that you want to be right, and then you add in, okay, it'll also be funny, it's not going to be funny. You have to start with the funny first. And so what I think, where I think you're going with Samantha Bee is that she's really, it's obvious, she's really passionate. And that may not be as funny as if she starts with the funny and gets to the point.
Good point. I loved her on The Daily Show. She suffers no fools and she calls everybody out. The show now feels... Yeah. Anyway, let's take some calls. We have a number of people that want to get in on this. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about how political humor, particularly in the last 3 years or so, has evolved as our political culture has become more polarized. Allison D'Agnes is with us from Shippensburg University. And I'm asking you about whether you are drawn to one comedian, one cartoonist, maybe you keep track of the editorial cartoons, over another because of the political views you hold. If you're Republican conservative, where do you go for that release valve? Because yes, it does seem that a lot of the comedians are liberal and they're poking fun at the leadership. So to the phones to Foster in Duluth. Hey, Foster. Hi.
Hi. Well, a lot of, like what you said about Samantha Bee.
Yeah.
It's the same story for me and Stephen Colbert. And, you know, I think a lot of the stuff they say about Trump is funny. I mean, as a Trump supporter myself, I don't mind poking fun. But it does get pretty exhausting. I've turned to a lot of YouTube channels for my stuff now. But I agree about the whole, it's kind of beating a dead horse.
Yeah. What are you watching on YouTube, by the way?
I watch Steven Crowder, Louder with Crowder.
Uh-huh.
He has a lot of good points. He does a Change My Mind skit where he has unedited, full-length conversations about controversial topics.
Huh.
Really good stuff.
I'll check it out. Thanks so much for the call. So, Allison, you hear Foster saying kind of what I was saying about it feels repetitive. That's why I'm a little surprised that these entertainment companies, as represented in the Post, were startled to find that people's political ideology is driving who they're going to watch on late night.
Well, I think it's interesting, and Foster brings up a good point. What is sort of dominant right now is that our polarization is driving not just our interest in entertainment, but our interest in everything. I mean, it has just seeped into every element of our lives. It has seeped into sports. It has seeped into consumer culture. It is everywhere. And so because of that, it doesn't feel as strange for us to be picking different comedians to watch or different channels or different shows, because all the studies show that we're watching really different things based on our ideology or our party affiliation. That feels normal because we're also eating at different restaurants and we're wearing different clothes. And I mean, it just goes on and on. And so there's a theory out there that, you know, that we're in what are called filter bubbles, right? That we kind of are sorting ourselves, not just by where we live and who we listen to and hang out with and connect to on social media, but also with these kind of different brands that we're affiliating ourselves with. And so if you are in a filter bubble and you're lefty and liberal, then you are going to get clips from John Oliver and Stephen Colbert. And if you're on the right, you're not. because it's just, like Foster said, it's just not his cup of tea. I've watched Louder with Crowder, and I have a lot of students who are conservative, and they love him. That is something that my friends who are liberals have never heard of. And that's kind of where we are right now. It's not because Steven Crowder isn't popular. He is. It's because we're really enjoying a totally different brand of entertainment from, you know, based on ideology.
651-227-6000 to talk to me about where you're getting your political humor these days, whether it's on late night, whether it's through some of the satirical cartooning, some really excellent cartooning that's going on, or if you're turning to special web series on the net. Would like to hear about that as well. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Do your choices for humor represent or align with your political ideology? You can talk to me about that on Twitter, at @CarrieMPR, where Julia says, "People I know who are oppressed and discriminated against don't find any of this funny. They wish those of us who hold the privilege can stop laughing so we can start caring and acting to produce change." Mark asks, "Is there a Colbert on the right? Does the right make jokes about Trump?" What do you think, Allison?
That's a really great question. There is not really a Colbert on the right, although there are emerging conservative political humor voices that are out there. There's nobody that is as big and as dominant as he is. And there's some reasons for that. It is really not within, generally speaking, it's not within sort of the conservative wheelhouse to poke at the power structure. And even when President Obama was in office and there was, you know, a lot of hue and cry from the right about him, it really wasn't expressed in a way that was funny. It was more expressed in a way that was outrage. Huh. And so, you know, now what we see are that looking at President Trump's approval ratings among Republicans, no, they are not making fun of him. They support him wholeheartedly. And in addition to that, there is this other really loud narrative going on that we are so polarized and so divided that the left, particularly journalists on the left, they are just out to get the president, and that's it. There's nothing funny about that, so they're not going to make fun of him at all. And that's really a problem, because it used to be that entertainment, you know, particularly late night humor, you know, back in 10 years ago, late night was where everybody went at the end of the day. You were real tired, and it was not separating. It was very,
it seemed kind of benign in some ways. Yeah,
it was. And the biggest voices of the time, Letterman could get a little political, but Jay Leno very specifically, and I interviewed a couple of his writers, he did not want to make anybody mad. And so if he did a joke and a Republican was the butt of that joke, he made sure that he also did a joke that made fun of the Democrats because he didn't want to lose one viewer. And we are just not there now.
Isn't this part of the reason, I think this was in that Post article, that Jimmy Fallon is losing numbers to Colbert? People want a sharper view. They want an editorial view.
They do, and folks were furious when then-candidate Trump appeared with Fallon and all he did was ruffle his hair, and that's where the huge uproar about Jimmy Fallon first started, because they felt, you know, you have this guy on your show, and all you're going to do is have fun with him. You're not going to hold his feet to the fire. And his point, I think, was, you know, hey, I'm just a comedian. What do you want me to do? And today, that is no longer an acceptable answer.
Call here from Tucker in Rochester. Hi, Tucker. Tell me how you come to this question.
I was just going to comment and say I'd call myself a conservative. I explicitly seek out on YouTube Late Night with Seth Meyers and the Young Turks and different specifically left leanings so that I can hear the other side, because I think what the other side finds funny is probably actually a thing that should be, I mean, examined, I guess, from my side.
I really like your approach to this, but I'm curious about, so there are a lot of places that you could get political analysis, but about what the left is thinking, but you're specifically looking at comedians because why?
Like I said, what the other side would find funny is probably the thing that's most glaringly maybe contradictory or maybe messed up on the other side. So.
Allison, this makes a lot of sense to me.
Oh, this makes a lot of sense to me too. Tucker, you are smart. and it's true, because where comedy is poking at the obvious, right? Poking at the real problems, and also in speaking truth to power, that can also be part of it too. So I think that that's really wise, which is why if you are liberal, you should try and find Louder with Crowder. It's interesting stuff.
Joshua says on Twitter, "I'm an independent, maybe a little right of center, but I love Bill Maher, although he relentlessly pokes fun at Republicans. At the end of the day, I don't care who you poke fun at. If it's funny, it's funny. My problem is with the comedians who poke unfunny fun." What Joshua is saying about Bill Maher is, often, now we all know his political leanings. He makes no,
right.
He doesn't hide that. But he is really tough, I think, on politicians of all stripes. And I like the way he holds their feet to the fire.
I agree. His brand of interview is something that's really important, I think.
Yeah,
but with his excellent interview skills, and I agree with you, he does hold a lot of folks accountable from all stripes. His audience tends to be more liberal.
Oh, and for sure. Yeah, you can hear them clapping on the obvious liberal lines and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I feel like he's educating them, too, while he's doing these interviews.
He is, but think about it this way. If you are a conservative politician, are you going to go on Bill Maher's show knowing, A, he's a tough interview, and B, his audience is sort of predisposed to not like you? And so just those two facts together means that there are fewer conservatives and fewer Republicans who are going to go on these shows, which means that the left is not going to hear from these folks. And that's how we're going to stay in these filter bubbles of ours.
Wendy says on Twitter, "I watch Stephen at home because if I didn't have this comic relief, I'd be crying every day." Joshua said, a different Joshua says, "I think there's a lot to be said about combinations of both left and right viewpoints into humor, debating like wrong about every podcast." Have you heard about this podcast?
How have I missed this? I'm making a note of it right now.
Joshua, wrong about everything. Okay.
Cool.
Huh. Okay. Interesting. To Joseph in Plymouth. Hey, Joseph, how are you thinking about this?
Yeah. I would like to kind of first reaffirm some of what you guys have been saying. For me, I felt like I kind of got pushed over the edge with comedy, too much politics and comedy probably about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And what I found is what really kills it for me is the lack of levity when politics seems to be the primary objective in the comedy. So I can think of comics that I would say, I might not agree with entirely politically. Say Dave Chappelle, for example, that I still like to listen to because it's sincere.
Good.
But I stopped watching SNL probably about 3 years back just because I felt like it kind of became a pulpit. And at that point, it wasn't really, lighthearted poking fun at the other side. It ultimately just became sort of mockery almost.
I think you've especially in using the word pulpit, I think you've identified if we sense a kind of right self-righteousness, right, in the humor, that turns me off, too. And Allison, I don't even think it has to be, you know it when you see it, even if you couldn't describe it.
No, right? I agree. And I think you're both really on to something. I interviewed Mark Maron, who is a podcaster, who interviews a lot of comedians. And I interviewed him several years ago. And he said, most comedians don't do any political humor because 95% of the audience isn't going to get it. Their eyes are going to roll into the back of their heads and they're going to be bored silly. The difference now is that you don't have to be plugged into, quote unquote, American politics to know who Donald Trump is. He came to office with more experience on reality TV than he did in the political realm. He knows timing. He repeats simple dramatic lines. And he was famous before he was a politician. And so he grabbed our attention and he was actually a sort of a caricature of himself. And so that is ripe to make fun of. But the problem is that when you then layer in that kind of anger that we have right now and that kind of really nasty polarization, then you get a constant attention on politics that can have a lack of levity because it feels like almost the stakes are too high now. And so there's so much going on at once, and that is making it really hard, I think, for a lot of people to be able to laugh.
I was interested in where gender fits into this, because I've got Rebecca Traister coming for our Talking Volumes series, and she's writing about women and anger.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been this kind of comes back to the Samantha Bee thing, but it also points to, is it Michelle Wolf who did the correspondence?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do we have you done any research into how we see women, humor, and this particular brand of anger that we see coming out in humor and political culture today?
It's a very good question. There are very few female voices within particularly late night comedy and late night humor. And for that reason, having, you know, Samantha Bee there, it's terrific. It is great to have a woman's voice. But I know that when there were a couple sort of open seats at the bigger tables, folks were saying, you know, it's probably time. Chelsea Handler's done a really good job. Let's give her a bigger platform. And that just hasn't happened. So on the one hand, there are just fewer female voices, and that's an issue. And then another is that women are expected to behave certain ways. And when they go past those expected ways, it feels incongruous, which can be very funny, but it also can be very jarring. And so you have audiences that are still not used to hearing women, that are still not used to hearing women who are angry. And then when they are angry, it feels like, well, wait a minute, I'm not sure that that's really what we signed up for, which feels very unfair.
You've made a lot of sense of this for me, the incongruity, our expectations that women are not, I mean, that, and that's what Rebecca Traister's book is all about,
right?
How women are not expected to display anger and the backlash that comes when we do, but mix
right.
that with humor, and that feels really off to people. Yes?
Yes, it does. Because, so, you know, they say that comedy is tragedy plus time. Tragedy can also be, you know, really seriously furious. And so for men, they seem to be really doing very well with it. And Samantha Bee is one of the sort of few who've had her feet held to the fire in a way that was different than others. And, you know, her language was intemperate. There's no two ways about it. But if, you know, if a guy had done that and said the same thing, I'm not really sure that it would have had the same reaction.
Yeah. Mallory says, I love John Oliver because he provides comic relief while also choosing a topic each week. To dive into. He's really good at that.
He is. I call that advocacy humor. Because it's really something different and new, and it's fabulous because he takes a really nice deep dive, a long extended period look into a different topic, and he does provide humor. So he is teaching us something along the way, and that's really wonderful. But remember, he's British. He's providing that outsider perspective that Trevor Noah is also, that Samantha Bee is also. You know, these are outsider voices. These are folks who haven't really had a seat at the table. And so now they are. And it's interesting to hear those outside perspectives.
Good observation here from a listener on Twitter who says, I'm now starting to watch more comedians from outside the U.S. It feels less us versus them while still making fun. Here's a question for you, Allison, from Ryan in Mankato. Hey, Ryan, what do you want to know?
Hi. Yeah. So I love this program, by the way. What a great idea to talk about. So connected to people and what they're interested in. I think I just wanted to say that I feel like there's a place for the comedy in politics, which is a little bit of a different perspective than what I'm hearing mostly. You know, the wise fool from Shakespeare, the jester in the king's court. You know, these characters in history have been important to connecting people to politics and allowing a little bit of access in a different way from a different viewpoint to some important issues. And so I just wanted to pose that idea.
It's a really good idea. I mean, even the fool, you know, was sanctioned in the royal court, right, Allison? He could do and perform things that the king would allow.
It's true.
That others couldn't.
Yeah, and Ryan brings up a really good point. And at the risk of sounding a little partisan, the one observation that I would make is that up until now, that has been true. Because up until now, we've had presidents and leaders who have been in on the joke. They've been self-deprecating. And so President Obama, you know, I mean, he appeared on Between Two Ferns, and he was on Fallon, and Stewart all over the place. George W. Bush, too. He really sort of showed a great self-deprecating sense of humor, and that is lacking with President Trump. He does not like to be made fun of, and that he has made very clear. And when he is in a position to tell a joke, an actual joke. I have not heard him use himself as the butt of that joke. He has cast that shade on other people. And I think that's the problem, right, that we're missing that ability for us to kind of laugh at ourselves right now. And that may be why political humor isn't working as well as it had before in the past.
You just mentioned where I go on YouTube to watch Between Two Ferns. Oh, my gosh. That
yeah.
is just the best.
<It's pretty fantastic.
laughs> It is the best. Allison, you were great. Thank you so much. Really
Thank
good
you,
to
Carrie.
Have
this
you for this.
So much fun. Thank you for the opportunity.
For me, too. Allison Dagnes is a professor of political science at Shippensburg University, where she researches political humor.